to Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're embarking on a multi-part series on Autechre's mysterious side project, Gescom. Today, we'll dive into the first two Gescom EPs from 1994. They're just called Gescom EP and Gescom 2. An EP from 1995 called The Sounds of Machines Our Parents Used, and two more EPs from 1996, Kinel and Motor. We'll pick back up with our next bonus episode on Autechre's Kinel remixes, then do another proper episode on Minidisc, ISS SA, A1 to D1, and Skull Snap. Then we will circle back around with another bonus episode on the last of the Gescom remixes, the EPs titled This and That. So, if you've got thoughts on any of these upcoming Gescom topics, send them our way, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. And if you want to weigh in on anything we talk about today, we'll have plenty of time to discuss your thoughts on one of those bonus episodes. Again, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. A quick warning, though. I am in the middle of moving to another state right now, so our recording schedule might be a little irregular for the next few weeks. We'll try to keep you updated on Twitter. That's @gonkcastpod. But just bear with us if it takes us a little longer than usual to get the new episode up. All right, Dan, so little is known about Gescom that there probably won't be much to say about each individual release, though we'll do our best. But why don't you just give us a quick rundown on everything we know about the project as a whole?
Yeah, Gescom, which is an abbreviation of Gestalt Communications, is usually described as an Autechre side project, but Sean Booth calls it an umbrella project featuring 15 to 20 different artists in various configurations. Some of these artists, like Autechre, for example, seem to be heavily involved, while others may have stopped by for a single gig or jam session. We don't know who appears on what, but there are a few theories about how Gescom tracks come to be. When asked during the 2013 Ask Autechre or anything if they ever get together with friends and jam, Sean said, yeah, that's how a lot of Gescom stuff happens. So Gescom might just be the product of these informal hangouts. Sean also says that they categorize any AE track that requires a third party as Gescom. So some speculate that Sean and Rob simply let friends finish their abandoned ideas. However, Sean adds that other Gescom people sometimes use the name without us as well. Nevertheless, others think that every Gescom release After the first EPs are purely Booth and Brown. To quote from Resident Advisor, if it's on Scam, they call themselves Gescom, regardless of cooperation, it seems.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll do our own speculating as we walk through the individual releases, but I do want to note that Incunabula has the motto, Gescom, pleasure is our business, printed on the spine, and the liner notes thank Daryl Fitton, aka Bola, for Gescom. The Basecad EP also has Gescom Pleasure is Our Business printed on the inside spine, and the liner notes say, Autechre Music Systems from Gescom Transcendental. This brings us up to 1994 and the first Gescom releases, but before we get into that, I wanted to ask you, Dan, how big of a Gescom fan are you? Have you listened to much of the early stuff we'll be talking about today in particular?
You know, I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan. I downloaded it all one time, you know, just searching, getting all, you know, the Autechre odds and ends, you know, before we did this podcast. And, you know, I listened to it all, you know, a few times, you know, never fell in love with any of it. This is definitely the first time I'm digging deep into it.
Yeah, I like pretty much all of this is new to me, to be completely honest. I'm sure I've checked out some stuff. I definitely checked out Minidisc and then checked right out of that as soon as I had started it, I'm pretty sure. but, you know, I've probably dabbled, but it's just like, this is really all like quite new to me. And on that note, listener Joe asked this great question. He says, based on what you've said in previous episodes, it seems like Gescom as a whole is something that neither of you have delved into. I have to ask why. It's always baffled me that two Autechre fans who are hardcore enough to devote a year of their lives to making a deep dive podcast have almost no experience with such a major part of their work. Is it because band side projects usually end up pretty shitty and you just haven't been interested? Or is it just coincidental that you never got around to these releases? You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the reasons we do this podcast is because we wanted to dive into the Autechre stuff that we weren't that familiar with. You know, so this is definitely a part of that. I think it is a little bit of, you know, the whole side project thing. Rarely are those, you know, required listening and stuff. So I think that's why I always sort of, you know, put it on the back burner. And just, I mean, like I said, I dove into it a little bit and just it's mostly not, you know, albums. It's EPs, singles, yeah, kind of thing. You know, those things are a little more difficult for me to get into, you know, just to put into my normal, you know, everyday listening. So it's really just never made it.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I'm maybe a little bit weird in this, but I'm just like an album dude. Like,
yeah,
I have a hard time caring about what I perceive as like kind of lazy throwaway things. It could be my favorite artist ever. And if they're like, hey guys, here's a couple songs I recorded with a buddy yesterday afternoon, hope you enjoy, I'm like, no thanks. Let me know when you make your next major artistic statement. You know what I mean? Like, that's all I really care about. And that's why, you know, over the course of this podcast, there have been a couple things that I really spent like very, very little time with, even in the Autechre, you know, main discography, because I just sort of assumed it would be one of these like kind of side project holdover kind of a things. You know, what I found is that pretty much every Autechre thing, including like even their bootlegs and stuff, you know, I just never listen to bootlegs. I never listen to outtakes. I never listen to leaks even, because I trust artists to like make the call on what's going to go on the capital A album. But I've learned that Autechre like take it very seriously, even their live sets, you know, even their little EPs, even things that seem like throwaways. And so, yeah, I think Joe pretty much nails it. It's like, throughout my life, when I hear about Gescom, I think of like Autechre and pals having some fun. And I'm like, you know what? Good for them. I hope people enjoy that, but it's just not for me. I'll check out like the major artistic statements. And so, you know, we'll talk about whether we were surprised or not, but you kind of feel me on that?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely, you know, sort of the way I feel. You know, I may be a little deeper than you. You know, artists I really love, I'll dive in and get every little scrap. But yeah, I mean, frequently, you know, if someone even that I love, you know, releases a single from the album, I'll wait till the whole thing's out. Yeah. You know, I just this stuff mostly not being, you know, on streaming and everything, also kind of helps it. You know, having to be in another app, you know. I'll wait.
Yeah. I mean, I swear, even my favorite artists, like Autechre, for example, I skip a bunch of stuff because I just like assume it's not, they didn't put their like A game onto it. But anyway, let's kick things off with the first Gescom EP. What do we know about it? What little do we know about it, Dan?
Yeah, Scam released the first Gescom EP in September of 1994. That's the same month as Autechre's Anti-EP, and just 2 months before Amber. It was originally vinyl only, but got its first digital release in 2009. An insert included in the original pressing reads, "No information at this moment in time." But the disc itself lists the conspirators as Sean Booth, Rob Brown, Daryl Fitton, a.k.a. Bola, Rob Hall from Scam Records, and Daniel 72, a musician and designer near Manchester. Doesn't seem to have gotten much attention at the time in the music press, but on Rate Your Music, it's currently in the middle of the pack as far as Gescom releases go, with an average rating of 3.37.
So I kind of want to start with something I think we'll return to throughout this episode: Gescom's presentation and just overall aesthetic. I enjoyed reading discovery stories from listeners like Quino, who said they learned about Gescom through radio recordings of their broadcasts on KISS, which is like a formerly pirate radio station in the UK. I think it's gone legit now. But Quino says, it piqued my meandering electronic music taste with more variation between danceable and quote-unquote intelligent tracks. Weird thing, I first went through Gescom's discography before Autechre's thanks to this. And from listener Steve, who talked about finding a copy of the Gescom EP in a now defunct record store in San Francisco in the mid-90s. I also think it's relevant that listener Joe wrote, "I'm not a huge fan of the Gescom artwork in general. The original EP is kind of minimalist and clean, but not in a particularly interesting way. I think in general with their Gescom releases, they've tried to go with a graffiti aesthetic, but there isn't a single piece of album art in the discography that blows me away the same way that many AE covers do." So, Dan, let's say you stumbled on this EP back in 94. What would you think about the very low-key, like almost deliberately underground presentation. You know what I mean? It honestly looks like the kind of thing you would have to find on a pirate radio station, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that cover, like, really does sort of look like a old radio promo release sort of thing. Yeah. It's basically just the title, on a white background. You know, I don't think that I would notice it, you know, unless I knew about, you know, the Ottecker connection or anything. I agree with what Joe said, you know, this artwork and really pretty much all the guest com artwork, like nothing really, you know, grabs you like Ottecker. You know, that's one of the things, like, with Ottecker, you know, I think that gets you sort of interested at first, you know, the cover of Amber, you know, those hills. And I mean, even things like Confield and stuff, it's just like always the art is so, interesting, which I guess we should note that, like, the Guestcom stuff's not made by Designers Republic. So, maybe that's part of it. But yeah, I mean, it does sort of look like a pretty underground pirate radio sort of thing. So I mean, if I was in that scene, you know, maybe I would I'd be more apt to check it out, but I wasn't. I was six.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of like intrigued by how low key it all seems. Like, it just sort of like they just sort of plopped it out there with like little fanfare at all. It doesn't look like anything that you should stop and pick up. And it just has like this kind of hidden gem quality. But, you know, isn't it kind of weird then, since like Guestcom as we kind of know it now seems to be all about this anonymity, you know, but here the participants are actually listed on the record. You know, at the same time though, it's not like it says Sean and Rob, who you know from Ottecker or anything like that. But isn't that kind of weird, because they stopped doing that?
Yeah, I wonder if that's just like, you know, maybe, you know, is it like Scam was like, oh, maybe we should put everybody's name on here, you know, to promote it a little bit, because it still costs money to make these things. Or is it just like they decided later on, like, oh, you know, the anonymity would be, you know, more fun, you know, cooler. Or even, I mean, like the little thing I read earlier, it said that, you know, sometimes there's 15 or 20, you know, maybe people involved. Yeah. So maybe it just became like listing it was too difficult. I mean, maybe even to the point where nobody really remembers who did what.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, this is something I kind of want to return to a lot, not just in this episode, but over the next few episodes. But I'm just like totally transfixed on like figuring out what Guestcom is, like why it even exists. I just find it so interesting that they're working on this like artificial intelligence series and seem to be fully committed to it. And the aims of the artificial intelligence series, like we talked about, seem to be sort of about legitimizing electronic music, you know, this like sort of underground art form. But simultaneously, they're kind of making sure they have this little outlet for their more underground impulses. So, you know, again, we'll talk about this more, but does the way that like the Guestcom EP is presented, kind of the way it looks, you know, does it shed any light on why you think they started this project in the first place?
You know, I think it seems like it. You know, Rob and Sean, they seem like people who are probably constantly making music. You know, they probably make stuff that is, you know, would never be an Ottecker thing, you know, just for fun and stuff. And then, you know, obviously I would imagine they would probably do that with friends and stuff too. So it seems like maybe this is like an outlet to let people hear some of that stuff, you know, for the fun of it. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows, but
yeah, we'll never know. It's just, I'm going to like ask you over and over again, because I'm just like, this is almost like the thing I find most fascinating about Guestcom, because it kind of has this weird, I get this weird vibe, and again, we haven't like gotten into the music itself, but I just get this weird vibe from the first Guestcom EP that it really is like a, this is some stuff we did with friends, you know? And yet it has this like very stark, like very kind of cool underground aesthetic, like where it's just like, you know what I mean? You almost just like see that like name printed on the like white sort of paper slip cover Guestcom and just be like, what is that? I bet cool people know what that is, but I don't know what that is. I better book this episode. You know, it just has like this real like kind of cool underground aspect to it, which is just, I just find so interesting in 1994, because it's like kind of antithetical to what Warp is trying to do, I think, with electronic music. But that it's almost like Ottecker wants to stay connected to that like looser kind of world, like not making proper albums all the time, like kind of riffing with friends and stuff. I don't know. Again, I want to return to it, but You know, let me ask you how you would describe the overall sound of the Guestcom EP. But first, let me read a description from listener Joe, who writes, "The Guestcom EP is like party music for astronauts on long-haul space voyages, with a great rave up at the beginning and a chilled-out ambient come down at the end." What do you think of that, and how would you describe the sound palette and style here?
Well, I like that description. I think it's a more inventive way than the way I would describe it, but sort of the same palette of that. Because, yeah, I think the first side, or the first two tracks, are sort of like, especially the first one, sort of has like that rave up quality, a little yeah, dancey and everything. And then the last two, are bringing it down, much more ambient. Like even the third track, I think, like, even sort of Cicada, I think even sort of sounds like something that could be from artificial intelligence or something. So it sort of like feels like it's going from this, I don't want to say traditional, but older style of electronic music into this more intelligent dance music, sort of ambient kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, like, I don't know. I find this EP so bizarre, honestly, because the first track is so heavy. It's like, mm-hmm, really heavy, blown out, distorted, like industrial techno, like on a very pure, genre sense. Like, I would just like describe it as like sort of industrial techno. And then as the thing goes on, it kind of shifts into, like you said, much more ambient territory. It gets like very dense with like these big, washes of sound, mm-hmm, and I don't know, just a lot of it almost sounds like the materials, the elements of industrial techno or something, but just like emphasize the like ambience that's sort of hanging underneath those kinds of tracks, and just turn it into almost like huge drone washes. You mentioned Cicada. It has like a pretty huge section in the middle that is just almost like motionless, mm-hmm, kind of global communication style, like ambient wash, And so it's just so weird because it's sort of like, I don't know, starts somewhere very different than I think it almost very quickly goes. Now, in regard to that sequencing, listener Joe wrote, "The Guestcom EP is very possibly the best 12-inch format EP the group has ever put out, and listening to it reminds me of how amazing this format has worked for them over and over. I love their standard length albums as well as their crazy long stuff, but there's something about four tracks lasting 30 to 40 minutes that works so perfectly for them. It's enough to create a satisfying arc without forcing them to construct an album and exclude or include certain tracks just for the sake of flow. I can totally understand why they decided to approach XI as a collection of these." So what do you think about the sequencing here? All the tracks are quite long and feel pretty distinct, but does it have a satisfying arc as a whole?
It doesn't feel like an album in the sense, like all four of these tracks like go together, but I think they are sequenced well. Like I said, the first two are the more higher tempo ones, and then the flip side is, the more ambient, down tempo, sometimes, droney kind of thing. So I think they've definitely put some care into the sequencing, but I don't know if it feels like, it maybe feels in a similar way as some Autechre EPs. It's clearly, clearly there's some thought, to why these tracks are together and in what order, but it's not, fully the way there that, like an album would be.
Yeah. I feel kind of like it feels like it's got like an album arc, but it's missing those little, interstitial parts, like Joe said.
Yeah, it's like a little too short and missing all the those little pieces that get you from A to B.
Yeah, I that's totally how I feel, because again, it like starts just in like such heavy industrial techno territory, and then kind of awkwardly, I think, in like a lopsided way, it shifts into like quite ambient. I mean, again, still, like I said, those kind of elements, the sound palette of like kind of a crunchy, gritty, like blown out kind of industrial techno, but it starts shifting in the ambient direction quickly, like with five, mm-hmm, and then it kind of stays there for the rest of the record, despite lots of like blippiness, especially like on that last track, there's lots of like tons of like laser zapping kind acid sounding stuff. So it sort of like stays somewhere in the genre, but it's just, I don't know. Am I making a sense where it goes from like, I can imagine the last three tracks in a row, basically on an album, but you feel like you're missing some connection between the first track and the rest of those three tracks. But then again, it's like, maybe Joe is right, that it's supposed to be just four individual tracks that kind of complement each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of sequenced and built the way, like, you know, if you listen to the A side, you know, if you imagine there's, you know, some intermittent, you know, side that you miss when you flip over to the B side, you know, like those are those tracks that get you from that to that. And, you know, maybe that, and then maybe that works better in the way this was originally intended, which, you know, was on vinyl. I think, you know, when you put it digital and then you have, you know, the Five and Cicada, you know, really come back to back, you know, like, it does sort of, I hate to fault them in 1994 for making something that, you know, I don't think like Cicada or Five and Cicada were ever really meant to not have that pause and the flip in between, you know?
Yeah, I get that. I just, there's something to be said about the fact that we're not like listening on vinyl, we're not like pausing to flip it, but it does just kind of feel like the last three tracks really belong together, and the first track like just kind of almost stands out like a sore thumb for me. But on a somewhat related note, listener Tom wrote in to say that most of Gescom has never made it into my permanent rotation, and listening again, I've finally figured out why. There might be some cool beats and chill grooves, but for the most part, they just don't develop. There might be a slow build as the various elements come together, but then they just sit and spin for minutes on end. To borrow Gabe's complaint about some of the tracks on the AI comps, they aren't songs. They don't have enough structure. Maybe if I'd spent more time getting stoned in darkened rooms, they might be more appealing. We'll have to return to this comment as we work through the other releases, but do you agree with that characterization of the kind of track structures when it comes to this EP?
I kind of do. You know, it's sort of the reason, you know, we were talking earlier about why we've kind of dismissed Gescom and, I mean, even EPs in the past, because, you know, that it does sort of like make you think that it is going to be just this, you know, sort of throwaway jam kind of things. Mm. And a lot of times here, it does sort of do that. You know, it's not always fully fleshed out. But it's like, you know, I don't get as mad about it when it's a, you know, a 12 inch with four tracks on it, you know, if this was a record. But yeah, I do sort of feel that, you know, we'll bring it up again with the other records. I think this one is like one of the least offensive in that, you know, way. But I think it definitely still, you know, like Cicada. I mean, you talked about the huge drone wash and stuff, and I love drone, and it's good, but you know, there's moments where it just sort of sits too long, maybe, especially for being you know, just four tracks and just, you know, what is it, 30 minutes or so.
Yeah, I mean, and they're all like quite substantial, you know, they're like verging mostly on 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Or around there. You know, what I found in listening to this is that there is not, like you said, much variation in the track structures. And they do kind of have this, you know, what that listener was describing, listener Tom, that like, it's just kind of, it gets up and running and it's just sort of locked in this steady groove. And then you almost always get like some, you know, breakdown, right? Like where like a couple elements drop out and then they inevitably return, sometimes one by one, sometimes all at once. And then it might do another breakdown depending on how long it is, but like, you know, you get this sort of interesting twist a little bit in Cicada where the breakdown actually is like the bulk of the song. You know, you're sort of expecting it to sort of pop right back in the way it has on the previous tracks, but they all follow that same basic structure. And I guess like that lack of variation, oddly, you know, paradoxically makes them feel more distinct, right? Like it kind of reminds you, oh, I'm not listening to an album. I am listening to like four cuts that are just sort of on a 12 inch. Mm-hmm. And you know, so if it was an album, you could like sort of penalize them for like not mixing up the sort of structures and stuff. But here it sort of just solidifies the idea that these are four individual things, even though there is like sort of, there are nice compliments, especially to those last three tracks, you know?
Yeah. I completely agree.
Now, on the topic of getting stoned in darkened rooms, listener Joe brought up the frequent associations between Gescom and drugs, even more frequent than drugs and AE, it seems, and wrote, "I appreciate how you guys do your part in dispelling the idiotic stereotype that the only way to enjoy experimental music is high as a weather balloon. I hate it when people assume I do tons of drugs just because I listen to stuff like Autechre. Sure, Autechre probably does sound better when you're high, but literally everything sounds good when you're high. Music that's specifically designed to be listened to when high is by default pretty shitty if you have to be out of your mind for it to sound good. I don't know if you guys are just saying you haven't done any drugs because it's a publicly available show, but either way, it's much appreciated. Do you get a particularly druggy vibe from the Guestcom EP?
I mean, I think it's an easy thing to ascribe to, I think, pretty much any electronic music, especially things that, you know, verge in that ambient, ambient techno, sort of even acid techno kind of thing. You know, it's just like, I don't know if it's the culture or, you know, what, but people do just always sort of ascribe drugs to that. I mean, even like Joe said, just experimental music in general. I in particular don't, because I really do agree with Joe. I hate when people say, oh, you got to listen to that, you know, high, or because I agree with them. That's stupid. You know, if you can't enjoy it sober, it's probably shitty. So I get why people make that assumption, but I myself do not.
Yeah, I mean, I get it because it's like wildly dense. In a way, it's even denser than the stuff that Autechre was doing on Incunabula and chunks of Amber, which I think is like quite minimalist actually. Especially these last three tracks, like, just get incredibly dense with like almost, you know, I want to describe it as like kind of atonal, like on Five, for example. It sort of like slowly, you know, builds up, but there's this kind of like pads and strings and stuff like kind of working in the background, and they just have this like weird Wagnerian, like almost atonal quality. Like there's just so much going on. And so yeah, I get the idea that like you could kind of zone out and like really get lost in this thing. And it kind of goes to the previous listener's point about like they're pretty repetitive tracks, like not reinventing the wheel or anything of electronic music. They just kind of get going and they just ride with like maybe the lightest breakdowns here and there. Yeah, so it just has like kind of a nice zoning out quality, but yeah, I don't think at all that you would need to be high to dig it, because I do think there's just, again, I'm repeating this too much, but like those last three tracks in particular, there's a shocking amount of depth in those, like that I kind of enjoyed listening over and over again and just like kind of zoning in on different elements, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So I know that, you know, my understanding is that high people do like to kind of zone in on things in a similar way. Now, before I ask you what your favorite tracks are, let me quiz you on Rate Your Music's track ratings. There is, there's one that's kind of clearly, nothing's like bolded here, but there's one that's kind of clearly higher than the others. Do you know what that might be?
I think a lot of people love Cicada, so I'm gonna guess that.
Actually, that is one of the lower rated ones. The highest is Five. Yeah, that surprised me also. Now, what about you? And let me just note first that when asked in the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything what his favorite Guestcom track is, Sean said, probably Five. Today, anyway. Which is so weird, because you know how they were like, I mean, this is 2013, right? And they were like already saying that Incunabula and Amber sounded a little corny to them, even though they tried to walk that back. But for some reason, Five was still his favorite Guestcom track ever in 2013. But also, I wanted to note that listener Joe said he can't wait to hear what Dan thinks of his namesake track. Is it his new number one song in their discography? A little dad joke for you there. What are your favorite tracks here?
Well, I do appreciate them, writing a song about me. That's very nice. I didn't notice Gabe one anywhere.
No. Actually, I think there's a Dan, there's some song, I can't remember what it is, but on Minidisc, there's like a couple tracks named Dan something as well, so you got that to look forward to.
Nice. I do like that song. I love that like really blown out sort of snare sound, but
yeah,
I don't think it's my favorite on here. I think my favorite is probably the last song, which I can't pronounce, Excuse Spock or whatever. It's just I really like how, you know, ambient it is. Those laser sounds are pretty fun. I think it's like a great, I think it goes so well from the previous track to Cicada. Yeah, like I love that transition. And I bitch about it all the time, but I even sort of like the vocal sample that runs through this. At first it sort of sounds like, you know, radio transmissions, like, I mean, the astronaut thing. But then it turns in where it's like some cop thing.
Yeah.
Which was kind of cool because it gets a little, as much as I love space and stuff, it does get a little corny when you use like the old, you know, Houston, you know, kind of thing. So it was kind of, cool that it turned from that to just being like, some weird cop thing. So I think that's probably my favorite track on here.
There's also some like very spooky laughing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Points
yeah.
in there that freaks me out, honestly. Yeah, I love that track. I mean, if you haven't guessed by now, it's just like these last three tracks, I kind of adore all of them. You know, that Skew Spock, I think might be my favorite as well, just because it just feels like so dense with like these very slow strings, like adding so much like grandeur and actually like weirdly, I don't know, human drama to like, it sounds like just very dystopian and like dramatic to me. But then that's layered just perfectly into a lot of like kind of silly zany zapping. And then mm-hmm. like you mentioned this like bizarre radio chatter kind of thing. I don't know. It just like, it just kind of like knocks me out with like these, the kind of nice use of these beaming strings on a track that just on paper, I would say, oh, that's kind of like a silly, like just acid zappy kind of, you know, thing. But it ends up being like kind of, I don't know, very moving. And I just honestly feel the same way about like Cicada with that like huge sort of droney, central section, and like these kind of weird haunted female vocals on that, weirdly, you know, which is like quite unique, I think, in Ottinger's discography. Mm-hmm. Five does a lot of that again, I mentioned before, that kind of like almost Wagnerian like epicness to the strings underneath. There's just like a lot of density that is like, I find kind of emotional, kind of moving in a weird way. Did you feel moved at all by any of that?
I don't have any feelings, so no.
Yeah, you're not the guy to usually be moved.
Yeah.
Well, a few listeners shared their Guestcom EP highlights. Listener Tom put the last three tracks here on his list of favorite Guestcom tracks, period. And listener Steve described them as dreamy soundscapes that help solidify the Scam and lo-fi IDM sound, adding they're very similar to Bola. Listener Joe shared thoughts on every track, highlighting Danone's vocal sample and blown out percussion, Five, and its percussion that melts away and comes back in from time to time, and Skew Spock, which is definitely a traditional IDM track, but also an incredible one and does everything that the AI series did well. Any new thoughts come to mind reading some of our listener highlights here?
Well, I've never listened to Bola, so if you know that's similar to him, I think I will you know, check that out. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Bola, his real name, what I forget it now, but Fitton, Daryl Fitton, he's like on one of the bonus tracks on the AI2 compilation, which we didn't talk about.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He is there. So maybe that's a good place to start. Is there anything you don't like on this EP?
You know, I mean, it's so short. Kind of not. I like all the tracks here. I guess maybe the first one is the least good, but I think it's mainly because it doesn't flow as well with the other three, like you've said many times. But there's nothing here that I would want to skip or wish wasn't there.
Yeah, I'll say that I'm tempted to say I actively dislike Dan One, because I'm just not into that, like, kind of, I don't know, just like a very traditional kind of blown out industrial techno thing. Like, it just sounds, you know, not generic, but just like, it just sounds like everything that's in that vein. Mm-hmm. Until toward the like last half, there are these kind of like ghostly chords that kind of come in like very faintly. And I don't know, it's just like this, again, that light touch of like, I think, quite profound melody, like a minimalist melody, but still like a lot of drama to it. And I think it just adds so much. It like raises this kind of not great track, in my opinion, like a lot of levels all at once for me. And, you know, that's where, you know, I don't know how much speculating we want to do, because it's like a fool's errand, but it's just like, I want to avoid the temptation to say that everything I like about these Guestcom EPs is Ottecker's doing, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
I read Dan One and I assume that this guy, what was his name? Daniel 72 or whatever, who's like credited on the, as one of the collaborators or conspirators is what they said. Who I've never heard of, but I just sort of imagine that Dan One must be named after him. Maybe it's like mostly his track, or he started it, or his demo, or whatever. And I just have this like strong temptation to say, kind of a boring, like generic track until, Autechre got in there. Just with that little bit of cord magic, the way they like put those haunting, you know, drones underneath amber tracks and all this, you know, they did it again and saved Dan One. You get what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I tried to like avoid doing that too while listening to, you know, I mean, basically all of these things we'll talk about today. You know, I tried to divorce, you know, trying to hear, you know, specifically what's Autechre. I mean, obviously you can't do that completely, but I sort of tried my best to not know who's who.
Yeah, I just know that they have a talent. I mean, this is
I know.
True. They have this talent for like these very minimal sort of little chord progressions or like very minimalist little hooks that, you know, this is why people complain that like Autechre doesn't make amber style music anymore. It's because like they had such a talent for like these, I think just like stunning melodies, like so simple but so stunning, and like I hear a lot of that, like a ton of that on this record, which is kind of why I like it so much. Now, we didn't hear a lot of negatives from listeners, though. Listener Joe wrote in to say, Cicada is the one Gescom song that seems to get obsessed over by everyone, but I've never really understood why it gets singled out. It's definitely a cool track, but I can never remember how it goes unless I'm actually listening, and I feel like they've done this particular style just as well on other releases. It could fit pretty well on either of the Saw albums, which is obviously a good thing. I do, however, love the ending with the kind of noisy circuits fading away. Anything to add off of that? I do kind of like that. Like it's again, got a lot of that human drama with like all of these like kind of chords and swooshes. I think like actually both Five and Cicada have this nice kind of like, it reminds me of like ocean waves or something, just kind of like gently rolling back and forth. It just has like this nice pulsating, like big drony quality. But then it's so cool how Cicada kind of like devolves into like almost a little chiptune melody. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I like the track. I don't really agree with Joe too much here. You know, I think it even sounds like it could be on AI or so. You know, I don't think it would be out of place. It's a good song. I think it's really great in the background. You know, it's really easy to like let it, you know, fade into fade into it. Going throughout the day or whatever.
I think it's like a kind of a stunner of a track, to be honest. Now, wrapping this one up, I just want to ask how you see this EP fitting into Autechre's 1994. Listener Steve said that Dan One sounds like it could have been on the Anti EP, and listener Joe said that Dan One sounds like a much more successful version of the kind of thing they were going for on Second Bad Vilbel, and that Five sounds like a more successful version of The Egg, where you have the maximalist dance track with all the stuff going on all at once, but it actually sounds good. It makes me think that the problem with The Egg was part less advanced equipment and part them still coming into their own as composers. He adds, it's stunning how the different elements lock in and out of step with each other in a way that would become more common on albums like Chiastic Slide later on. So does the Gescom EP shed any light on AE's creative development, or does it truly sound like a collaborative side project that we shouldn't try to like read Autechre into too much?
You know, I really do think it sounds like sort of something different, you know, and like none of these songs am I like, oh, that should have just been an Autechre song. Like it's always, you know, like you said, like those chords and stuff, there's often little touches where you're like, oh, you know, that is Autechre. But I think for the most part, it's, you know, if you played this to me, I didn't know that Autechre had anything to do with it, I wouldn't immediately, you know, point it out or think it's Autechre or anything like that. You know, I think it's fairly something different.
Yeah, I sort of agree in the sense that, and I think it's something that we'll sort of mention again and again, but like listening to this EP, it starts to like push me in the direction that part of the Gescom project is a little bit of like genre exercise fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, let's make kind of like more pure sort of industrial ambient techno with some friends, you know. It's like, it's just sort of paradoxical. You would think that like having a bunch more people in the mix would make for a more diverse sound palette, but weirdly, a lot of these records are like quite focused, like quite almost intentionally limited, like let's do this genre, you know, let's see what we come up with in this genre or something. And so that's like very not AE, even this early, like that is not really what they were up to or all about at all. But I do agree with listener Joe that I honestly believe that what you can hear on this EP is is Autechre becoming like really great composers. I mentioned again and again, like these kind of like just washes of ambient sound and strings and stuff. The arrangements on these tracks, I don't know, I think are like really stunning. They are honestly, I think like Amber quality. It's not like the tracks sound like they belong on Amber, but I feel like
they
are at that kind of level of their game. So any other sort of closing thoughts on this, or are we ready to move on?
No, I think that's good. All right, the next Gescom EP is sometimes called Gescom 2, sometimes called EP2, and sometimes just called C and D. In fact, the disc just says Gescom EP and lists the sides as C and D, which implies that this is a direct continuation from the first EP. This time, however, the credited conspirators are only Sean Booth, Rob Brown, and Andy Maddox, also from Scam Records. An insert included with the first pressing reads, Atavistic Rhythms for Beat Freaks. There's some confusion about when exactly this came out. It might be late 1994, but it's probably March of 1995. So either way, around the same time as Autechre's Garbage EP. There's also confusion about the speed these tracks are supposed to be played at. This one remains final only, and it's got very few ratings on Rate Your Music, only 48 as of this recording. Those who did rate it also seem to dislike it. It currently has a 2.83.
Yeah, so this one I think we can do much quicker than the first one. But how would you describe the sound of EP2?
It's you know, you were at the end of EP1, you were just talking about you know, genre exercise, and I think that fits here pretty well. You know, this is a hip hop genre exercise, I think.
Yeah, it's like pure like kind of DJ chopping, a lot of like, you know, what has to be sampled sounds. There's kind of like a lo-fi, like kind of, you know, sampled off a record, like a kind of shitty like a bargain bin record kind of a sound to it. You know, it's just like, yeah, it's almost I don't know, I guess we might as well just get right into it, but it's like very generic, I think, like DJ chopping. Both tracks have this kind of weird, like, it's like a record skipping, but it kind of functions like a horn blast or something, you know, which is, I think, just like the most generic thing from the early 90s, like, period. And it just kind of like adds like a little bam, 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 like over every track. Just kind of like looped hand percussion and stuff. I mean, just like, I don't know, very generic. So it's like, I was going to ask, does it sound like a continuation of the EP or just a total of the first EP or just a total change of direction? I mean, to me, this sounds nothing like the first EP other than, as you mentioned, it's just a new genre exercise.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing like the, you know, first EP at all. In fact, this record, I'm sure I've heard it, but I didn't remember it. This, you know, this one's a little harder to find and stuff. And, you know, so I was a little excited thinking that it was a continuation of that first one because I did enjoy that first one, and it's completely different. Not at all. I'll just say it's silly. It's kind of a silly record.
Yeah, I mean, feels like a real throwaway, like done in an afternoon kind of thing. Yeah. And so, you know, my question is like, why did they decide to, you know, not even come up with a new name for it and like quite deliberately tie it to the first EP? Does just any of the way that this is presented give any new hints on like the kind of early aims of the Gescom project, as we were talking about before?
I mean, maybe at this point there really kind of wasn't an aim, and it was just going to be like, you know, these fun throwaways with friends, and, you know, maybe they were going to do the old, you know, Led Zeppelin thing and just number them, and, you know, that got abandoned or something. Maybe these were made at a similar time, and that's why. I mean, you know, it's, again, questions what we won't ever know the answer to, but I don't know why. It doesn't really make much sense.
Yeah, it's just like everything about the way these first two EPs is presented makes it feel like they're just not taking this seriously. Like, it really is just Autechre with some pals, like, doing some fun genre stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that makes the first EP kind of even more badass, in my opinion, because it like comes as a shock, I think, when you get to those, again, those last three tracks, like how good they are, like incredible, honestly. And then you get to this one and it's like, oh, it is just them fucking around.
Yeah.
So I don't know why that first one was so good. you know, it's probably not worth asking you or quizzing you about highlights and lowlights because there's only two tracks, but suffice it to say that, like the EP itself, neither track is rated very highly on Rate Your Music. We also got barely any emails about this one, but listener Steve did share a defense saying, "I love this one. Both Snackwitch and Mag revolve around fairly complex hip-hop beats. Assuming that Sean and Rob worked on this one, it shows a lot of evolution compared to the beats on Warp Tapes. I love the acid-y sound and simple but funky as hell beat on Mag." I do agree with that. I think of the two, Mag is much better. It's got like kind of a heavier like funk to it. And it has just a couple unique touches, like not many, but a couple, exactly what this listener mentioned, like the kind of acid-y touches throughout. Again, like kind of a garbled vocal loop, but like it used in a very strange way that I find kind of hypnotizing. It just comes in for a little while toward the end. But, you know, what do you think of that? And do you like anything about these two tracks?
You know, I pretty much agree with you on Mag. It's the definitely the more interesting of the two, but not super interesting. The first track, Snackwitch, I kind of hate it. It might be my least favorite of all the Guestcom tracks that we talk about today. Just that like string hit loop that keeps coming. Yeah. It sounds like a 70s television show or something.
Yeah, it does.
It's just like, it's so corny. And then the like sampled bongos that come in, it's like, that's also very corny. It's just sort of everything that wasn't good about early electronic music.
I know. And it's like, it's very stiff. Like it doesn't have the swing of like good sort of DJ chop type music.
It's very like, amateur.
Yeah, it sounds very amateur. I even wrote down like toward the beginning of Mag, before it gets a little more interesting, like amateur hip hop hour again, you know? And it's just like, I don't know. So I think we can just move on already, but you got any closing thoughts on EP2 or are you ready to do it?
No, you know, just leave it at 48 ratings. No, you don't you don't need to hear this one. The Sounds of Machines Our Parents Used was actually released by Clear and Not Scam in August of 1995, shortly before Ottegger's Anvil Vapor and Tri Repete. This one contains no identifying info whatsoever. It almost looks like the back cover says something important, but it's stylized like graffiti, so I have no idea what it says. thankfully, this vinyl-only release got a digital reissue in 2005. It seems to be one of the more popular Guestcom releases. It got a short write-up in The Wire, and it's one of the highest-rated Guestcom releases on Rate Your Music with an average rating of 3.46.
Yeah, so I want to shout out listener Nick, who wrote in immediately after our very first episode to recommend that we discuss this EP. He writes, it's admittedly an Ottegger side project, but as you covered Lego Feet and asked for hidden gems, I definitely say it qualifies. It's an album I constantly revisit and always enjoy. Not their most complex work, but some of the most beautiful, up there with Amber. Having said that, I think it makes sense to start with the presentation again, since this feels pretty different from the first two EPs. We've got an actual title, some proper artwork, etc., etc. However, I do want to acknowledge that a lot of that obscure mystique is still present by reading this story from listener Steve, who writes, "I could never find this one on vinyl, but Ghost Sheep was on Clear Records' It's All Becoming Clear compilation, so I picked that up. I sent someone on the IDM mailing list who lived in the UK 6 blank cassette tapes and some cash, and they mailed me back the 6 tapes with the 2 tracks from the EP that I was missing. They're fairly professionally done, which I think was a point of pride for some people who traded tapes. The tapes also included some of the Mask compilations, and by the way, shout out to listener Eric, who strongly recommended we check the Mask comps out. I'm sure we will. The AE radio mix and EP from Scam Records, VVM, Dot Records, Worm Interface, and others that I couldn't get my hands on. I thought that was pretty cool. But anyway, what would you think if you saw this in a record store in 95? Feels like a more serious project all of a sudden, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. You know, the cover, while still just a, you know, a white background, it's got, you know, Guestcom written in this, you know, sort of graffiti way, but then you've got you've got this logo, you know, which they come to use basically, I think, for the rest of all the you know, EPs have, or EPs and LPs have, like that stylized like sort of G logo, which I think, you know, does sort of elevate it from being just looking like some throwaway side project thing. You know, it's like they've given it some sort of identity and you know, purpose.
Yeah, it's just like such a wild shift after EP2, you know, because it just feels like it feels like a serious thing. I mean, I think the artwork is actually very cool. It's cool that it's not just like white. It's like kind of like an off-white kind of background with that cool logo and this like kind of graffiti script. You know, the, like I said, the back cover has like some interesting encrypted graffiti, something saying something on the back. It's all just like very intriguing and just kind of classic looking, which just seems like, again, at this point, totally antithetical to the Gescom, you know, mission statement that we're trying to figure out. So it like totally complicates everything that I thought about Gescom. But what about when you put the record on? Does it feel like a proper record or more of the 12-inch approach that listener Joe was describing in regard to the first EP?
You know, I think this one sounds more closer to a proper record. I think a lot of it has to do with the title, you know, the sound of machines our parents use. And then, you know, the first track here is very Kraftwerk, which I think, you know, is obviously intentional. In fact, I think that one of the sound, like the piano sort of sound, I think is just an actual Kraftwerk sample. If not, it's just very close to the original. You know, I that's an obvious reference. I think everyone in electronic music, you know, today, you know, in the IDM scene, thinks of Kraftwerk as their parents, you know. You know, and when you do things like that, I think that that's elevating it again, you know, with the title, with the artwork, the logo. You know, you're elevating it to maybe not quite album status, but definitely, you know, more serious than definitely Gescom 2 and you know, probably even Gescom 1.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you could like say this about every track here, but certainly like putting it on and hearing that opening track Puzzle and reading the title, as you mentioned, it makes it feel like this is like a record with a theme or something running through it. You know, that's kind of what album titles are all about. So it's like, it just feels like a much more serious, like, you know, concentrated statement. Like I was saying earlier, like an actual sort of major artistic statement is the vibe I get from looking at it and like first hitting play. Now, how would you describe the kind of overall sound of the record and of those machines that our parents were apparently using?
You know, I don't know that there's like really, and this will maybe contradict what I was just saying, but I don't know if it's really like that cohesive of a sound. You know, the first song is like such an obvious, you know, Kraftwerk aping. And then I think, you know, the second one, Go Sumo, is, you know, it's a bit more contemporary and a bit more, it's definitely like faster. It's more like IDM-ish, you know, the way that, like, you know, sort of breakbeat, you know, drums are and everything. And then, you know, the last one is, you know, much more chilled out, has that sort of car horn noise that I think is on like Left Blank or something. And also I don't think that there's as much of a cohesive sound here. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, each track feels quite distinct. I do think, though, that there is like a pretty consistent kind of, I don't know how to put it, but just like this kind of nice, like bright, kind of like crispy glitchiness to the whole thing. You know, it kind of does remind me of like Tri Repete and that, where there's just kind of like this real, I don't know, analog glitching, like on a lot of the percussion and stuff. There's also a lot of kind of like piled up and up and up percussion, like especially on that first track. You know, you got like so many percussive aspects, like lots of nice hand percussion, you know, just lots of like, you know what I mean? It just keeps adding and adding till it's like almost like drum circle energy. The second track too, it's like, it's got kind of, like you said, like almost a more contemporary sound, but you know, you get these kind of, it takes a couple minutes, but like pretty wild tom rolls, like start like sort of John Bonhaming over the whole thing. And it just gets into this like, I don't know, like the first track in particular makes me think of kind of like a krautrock kind of chug.
Yeah.
And, you know, by the end, by the last track, it's quite like chill, but it still has this funk to it. And I don't know, maybe this doesn't make any sense, but it's like, you know how krautrock, it sort of contains like funk and it contains lots of sort of drum circle type of energy and stuff. I could just sort of hear like maybe with using krautrock as the lens, you know, and of course we've got the Kraftwerk reference in the beginning and everything. It's like using kind of that early Kraftwerk style krautrock lens, I can see how all three of these things belong together. And again, with the way that it's produced, with that kind of like crisp, kind of analog glitchiness, ties it all together for me, even though I agree they are quite distinct. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, I get that. If you want to, you know, assign a genre exercise, you know, to this record, yeah. I, you know, krautrock is maybe the one to assign to it. I don't think that it is as heavy of a genre, you know, exercise right. You know, the first two records, especially the second one. But definitely, yeah, that I think krautrock is the one I would give it if I had to.
Yeah, well, we talked earlier about listener Tom's complaints that most Guestcom tracks aren't songs, that they're just cool beats and chill grooves that don't develop. You know, is the track construction more complex here? Because on the topic of like krautrock, you know, I feel like Puzzle, for example, doesn't do a lot over the course of 15 minutes, but it just really leans into the kind of krautrock chug. Like that's what tracks like this are supposed to do. Like it's just supposed to chug along. And I think there's quite nice like kind of shifts, like subtle shifts in the beat, like kind of the beat morphs in sort of interesting ways. And I think there's lots of I don't know, just interesting, like there's kind of like a stuttery, like shimmering chord swell thing going on. There's just lots of like variation and movement in that. And again, with all that percussion, like just lots of variation and subtle shifts, but it leans heavy on the chug. And I feel like that actually really works here.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, again, it's the genre they're working in here. I think definitely like leaning into that chug, it's what makes that song, I think, so good, actually, you know, if they didn't, you know, those sort of things like Have to Breathe, you know, we've talked about it, like something like All In. If All In was 5 minutes long, it would just be a throwaway. You'd say, why am I listening to the same noise for 5 minutes? But when it's 60 minutes, you know, it gives it something. And I think, like, you know, Puzzle in particular, you know, sort of needs that length behind it. And then the other two songs, I think they develop fairly well. You know, you talked about on, you know, the second one, like those tom rolls come in and everything. Yeah. You know, that track and maybe even the second two tracks, they sort of feel like, and, you know, I said I tried to kind of avoid doing this, but it sort of feels like, you know, everybody's jumping it. You know, it's like whoever's around, you know, whoever's playing on this track, you know, is sort of jumping in, adding their own drums, you know, sort of, you know, the drum circle thing, like you said.
Yeah.
It like sort of feels like a drum machine drum circle.
It does. It does have kind of like a communal, like everybody adds something kind of a feel. You know, having said that, though, I do think Go Sheep is like, strikes me as quite a complexly composed song. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like it actually kind of moves in like interesting ways. And, it, you know, it starts off in like a very, I don't know, straight up like funk organ kind of a riff thing. You know, you've got some like very, it sounds very played, like this kind of lead keyboard organ thing that sort of joins, like almost like a Herbie Hancock kind of funk, like soloing over the top kind of way. But, you know, you hear like this kind of, these great shifts where it's like all the percussion drops out, that kind of lead keyboard like takes over and like kind of really blows up, and then it kind of lets all the air out and you get like a much like heavier kind of a chug all of a sudden, and it gets into like kind of proggy psych rock territory. I kept thinking of like, I don't know how to say this. Maybe one or two people will know what I'm talking about, but like Krangbin, this kind of like hip band right now that kind of does this like proggy psych rock stuff. Maybe you don't know it, but it just like kind of gave me that like highly composed, you know, funk.
Yeah, I don't think I know that, so I can't I can't comment.
Kind of cool, in my opinion. But I just, you know, in contrast to like just holding the krautrock chug on the first track, I think the last track is actually quite composed. Now, there's so few tracks here that it might be hard to quiz you, but one is notably higher rated on Rate Your Music than the others. What do you think that is?
Well, since there's only two written reviews and they both mention Go Sheep, I'm going to guess Go Sheep.
You are right. That's cheating a little bit, but you know, what can you do? What are your standouts here?
I think I pretty much agree with that. I like all the songs here, but Go Sheep is pretty much the raddest one. I love how like chilled out it is. I like that car horn noise coming in and out. I think it's nicely composed. It's one of my favorite songs from all of these you know, Guestcom releases that we're going through today, I think.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I kind of agree. I mean, Ghost Sheep is like an absolute bop. Like, it just absolutely rules. And I love the kind of like played like Herbie Hancock funk on it. I've probably said enough about it. I love Puzzle. You know, I think for me, like, the only thing that kind of gets lost in the shuffle is like Go Sumo, which is awesome, but it's just like, it kind of like leans into that kind of a chug quality to it as well. I do kind of like how you get like kind of this amber-esque, like kind of ghostly ambience underneath, and this kind of cool, like almost spaghetti western style, like bendy riff over the top, but it just kind of like chugs along and then it ends. And I think it would be a perfectly satisfying track, except for that it's following like the very massive Puzzle, so it just feels like, oh, it's over already kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Ghost Sheep kills it like as a shorter track, because it's just like so tightly written. But yeah, I hardly have a bad thing to say about anything here. Listener Tom called the first two tracks here some of his favorite Guestcom tracks, and listener Joe singled out Ghost Sheep, the third one, as one of the chillest sounding songs they've ever made in a discography full of anxiety-inducing music. Listener Steve complimented Ghost Sheep for capturing the Clear Records aesthetic, i.e. incredibly Spartan lo-fi melody and beats, stripped down to only what is needed and not overtly processed. He also said that Go Sumo has a great electro groove, and Puzzle reminds me of an ambient version of Kraftwerk's Home Computer, which also has the same rising scales. On that note, listener Joe wondered if the reason it's not on Spotify is because of Puzzle. You think that's a sample of Home Computer by Kraftwerk, or were they just able to make a similar arpeggiating chord effect? Thoughts on any of this?
Oh, yeah. I guess I brought up that same thing I hadn't read ahead in our review thing, but our notebook. But yeah, I think it... I was trying to remember off the top of my head what song it is, so I'm glad they said, you know, Home Computer. I didn't want to get in the let's listen to every Kraftwerk record mood again, you know, so I didn't do it. But it sounds damn close. I think it is a sample. I'm pretty sure it is. If not, it's a damn good recreation.
Yeah. You know, we didn't discuss this, I think, enough in regard to EP 2, but you know, that one's also quite sample heavy, as we mentioned. Do you feel like, you know, Autechre kind of let themselves play with samples a bit more on Guestcom? Because I think on their main discography, they're never like sampling, you know, recognizable tracks from other people, you know?
Yeah, or at least, you know, very rarely. Yeah, maybe. I mean, it might be a part of, you know, when your less known thing like Guestcom is, you know, on small labels, just some, you know, one-off pressings, I don't think people get as mad when you sample, and you know, because they probably never hear about it. Whereas, you know, Autechre's got, you know, a bit more status. They probably, you know, it's probably they have to worry about clearing that kind of stuff more than
Guestcom. But I don't really think that, like, the reason that Autechre doesn't sample is because of that. You know, it feels like they like want to totally invent like new sounds, and, you know, sound design is their whole thing. And it's like, they're just not really interested
in
sampling things that they didn't create themselves. You know, they do plenty of like sampling like stuff, but it, you know, it just strikes me as kind of interesting. Again, we don't know how much Autechre did or didn't do, but it's like, they seem like, yeah, we can have fun with samples on Guestcom. Why not?
Yeah. I get that.
Well, we didn't hear really any negatives about this one, other than listener Joe's comment that he's never grown attached to it, despite it being a very cool release and, again, ahead of its time. But are there any tracks or any things you didn't like here?
No, I think, you know, this one is one of my favorites of the records we listened to. It's just three good songs. I think, you know, the second one, like you said, gets a little lost in the shuffle. But that, again, might be... a detriment of listening to it, you know, digitally, when it was sort of intended for you to take a break after Puzzle.
Yeah, that's true.
But you know, that's maybe my only complaint, and it, you know, it's not much of a complaint.
Yeah. I mean, I love Go Sumo. I think it just, it feels like it ends a little prematurely to me for some reason. I assumed it was because Puzzle is so epic, but it is kind of right in the middle there between two, I think, really standout tracks for me. But I love this whole thing. I mean, I think it just feels like a real complete package. Like, mm-hmm. I love that they actually put a little effort into the design of it and the presentation, the title. I think it feels like three really distinct things, but like in a nice, I don't know, kind of tied together, complementing each other, starting really in a really satisfying way, ending in an almost even more satisfying way. I mean, I'm just kind of like bowled over by this entire release. Now, Does it feel connected to Autechre's 1995 in any particular way? Listener Steve said that some of the background melody on Ghost Sumo sounds very similar to a melody that later shows up on Tri Repete, but he adds, I'd say this EP is essential for any Autechre or early IDM fan, though it's so different from other Guestcom releases that I wonder how much Sean and Rob worked on it. So does this feel like a clear glimpse at AE on their way to making Tri Rep to you? Does it feel like Sean and Rob were barely involved, super involved, maybe not even, you know, collaborating with anybody at all on this, or where are you at with that?
You know, it's a hard question. I don't think I immediately think 1995 Autechre when I hear this record. It seems sort of just outside of everything in my eyes. I don't know if that, or ears maybe. I don't know if that's a lack of Sean and Rob, or just them doing something totally different. I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny because on the first Guestcom EP, I said I feel like I can really hear their burgeoning melodic compositional talents, and here I really hear like the mastery of drum programming. Like that sounds so like Tri Repete era Sean and Rob to me, just like with that. How we said there's lots of layers of drum sounds, but there's just like such a nice, like kind of crunchy glitchiness on so much of it that I don't know, just like kind of satisfies me. You know, everybody knows how like what a Tri Repete stan I am, but it's like it just kind of like really hits me in exactly the same kind of place. But you know, it's weird. I have this temptation to say, again, this is totally unfair, but I'm like, this is so good that it must be Sean and Rob by themselves.
Yeah.
But I think that you're like completely spot on that it has a very communal kind of feel, like everybody adds something, and that's like, you know, have a little drum circle kind of thing. It feels a lot more fun, like especially on Go Sheep, and especially with like just the blatant sampling of Kraftwerk and stuff, like just a little more carefree than Autechre usually is, in a way that is really cool and refreshing and different, you know.
Yeah, definitely, I agree.
All right, well, are we ready to move on then?
Yeah. Scam released Guestcom's Keyed Now in June of 1996, almost the exact midpoint between Autechre's Tri Repete and Chiastic Slide. When it comes to identifying info, the disc simply says conceived and secreted by Guestcom. On the original pressing, both sides in a locked groove, but this is another Guestcom release that's luckily been reissued on CD and digital, which might explain its relative popularity. It got more ratings on Rate Your Music than any other Guestcom release. And it's also one of the highest rated at 3.47.
Yeah, and I think that's secreted by Guestcom, so it was grosser than you read there. Weirdly, after Sounds of Machines, there isn't much presentation to speak of here. Listener Joe even wrote, Keynell is a contender for my favorite electronic release of all time, but I haven't shelled out for a copy because it's literally just a 12-inch and a bubble wrap sleeve. At the same time, Joe says that it feels like some kind of longer classical piece with four separate movements where you're not supposed to clap in between, but a bunch of people still do anyway. I don't mean this literally because there's obviously significant silence between each track, but more in how related they all are in terms of sound palette and shared elements. So in a first impression kind of way, does Keynell feel like another Guestcom 12-inch or another sort of major compositional statement?
I think this one feels more like a compositional statement. I'm sort of inclined to agree with the listener there a little bit more. You know, this one is I think even takes it maybe a step further than the previous one, Sounds are Parents Use.
Yeah, it feels like very, you know, we'll get into the music obviously, but it's like it feels it's just really good. Let's say I'll just spoil it. It's really really good, and it just feels so accomplished that it feels like this kind of major artistic statement, especially in the way that it kind of positions itself as like four related pieces, in the way the listener Joe was saying. But it's just so strange how it doesn't look like it. They didn't bother at all to do the thing they did with Sounds of Machines and like kind of give it like a thematic title or like any kind of interesting look or anything like that. It just feels like thrown out there the way that Guestcom EP1 is, and yet as soon as you hit play, I think you hear like oh, this is some major shit. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it really is strange. I don't know if it's playing up that, you know, secretive sort of you know, thing or what, because yeah, it really is odd. Even so much, you know, I'm looking on Discogs here, and you know, it only costs $24, which is yeah, cheaper than a lot of, you know, major released Ottinger stuff. I think because, like Joe said, it's just in bubble wrap and essentially has no artwork other than the two labels, which even those are just kind of a warped track listing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. It's just weird. Cause again, like this repeated theme of like, what is Gescom all about? Why did they even make this, you know, project in the first place? It's like, it just kind of feels like it started to get a little bit too legit, a little bit too warp-esque, a little bit too, you know, like artificial intelligence-esque, with this like kind of proper looking album, Sounds of Machines Our Parents Used. And they just like promptly pulled back in the other way. And they're like, no, this is supposed to be underground shit. And yet it kind of doesn't sound like that. So how would you describe the overall sound of Kino?
You know, I think like what the listener said, the you know, comparing it to like this classical piece that's all supposed to be sort of one thing, it's kind of apt. I think I would go for that. I don't know if it's like some of the songs like seem, I don't know if they're just sort of, you know, remixes or, you know, reintroductions of like similar ideas, or if it's supposed to be, you know, one kind of thing, because you know, there's things that run through the whole record that you're always hearing. It's like the major thing, I think, is there's like this machine noise that I think sort of sounds like a cash register. It's like a clunk clunk, and then like some sort of slurping noise. I thought like maybe, you know, like I don't know, like a one of those things that counts money, like a money counter machine thing, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
It's sort of, so it was like, you know, cash register, you know, money slurp, like, and that kind of like happens on the whole record. But none of the songs are like, oh, you know, this is just another version of that song. You know, they definitely have like elements of each other, but they don't feel like just four versions of that same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. Cause it's like every track leans heavily on that very glitchy, I think like deliciously glitchy in my opinion, like blown out kind of mechanical sounds. I couldn't put my finger on it as well as I think Cash Register does, because it doesn't sound like, I don't know, big heavy machinery the way they like try repetitive. No,
it's like a handheld thing.
Yeah, like all this grinding and twisting. I was writing down like, I don't know, printers and like fax machines going off and stuff, but it's like that like kind of there's usually like a tumbly kind of glitchy mechanical like rolling sound on almost every track here. But again, as you said, like totally reinvented on each track. Like it's like that same kind of sound, but just a completely different sort of percussive pattern. You know, also there is a ton of use of like very pure string sounds, like mm-hmm. in a way that you really don't get on any Ottinger release. You know, you get light touches of it on Amber and Incunabula and stuff, and maybe here and there, but it's like really pure string arrangements. And, you know, I think about like the first track, for example, it's got like this real kind of like, I never know how to pronounce it. It's pizzicato. Is that what people say? Like the kind of plucked string sound?
Yeah, I know what you mean, but also I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, many, many words on this podcast that I've only
read. Yeah, exactly.
like the title of every Ottinger song. But, you know, so it's got this kind of plucked, like low string thing, and there's like kind of a other layers of like higher plucked strings. It just sounds very like real. Like it sounds very, very real, mm-hmm. like real stringed instruments being plucked. There's like a very physical kind of like big kick drum on that track that sounds like a real, you know, kind of like big kick in a room somewhere being recorded or something. But then it's like seamlessly mixed in with like very glitchy, like staticky sounds, like all that cash register stuff, but it's just like all blown out and distorted and like unrecognizable. It's just sort of weird how you could kind of describe every track in that exact way, like crunchy blown out cash register drums with really pure string sounds. Mm-hmm. You know, there's slight variations, but that kind of sums it up, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I almost wonder, and I've got no basis on this whatsoever, but I wonder if, you know, if this is like a really collaborative one, it may, maybe, you know, everybody took these sort of, you know, same bank of sounds and each one, you know, each one came up with these different things, you know, because it is like when you write them all down on paper, it's almost as if all these songs are the same, you know, they have these same elements, but they're actually like pretty different. Like, I don't think like any of them really sound like the same song. They just sound like the same song made with the same pieces.
Yeah. Very different compositions made with like exactly the same pieces. But, you know, listener Joe wrote, I remember discussing the Keenel tracks with some guy on Reddit once who didn't like them because they were also unsettling and anxiety inducing. I don't understand how you can be a fan of AE and not enjoy anxiety inducing music since so much of it seems to do exactly that. Is that how you would describe the vibe here?
I think that like the cash register noise and slurping noise are sort of, you know, anxiety inducing sounding. Yeah,
I think there's some menace here. It's got like a very, you know, a lot of people are big fans of like that Johnny Greenwood's There Will Be Blood soundtrack. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of that kind of energy here, which is like very anxiety inducing. And like on Keenel 2, for example, there's kind of a, you know, again, the like totally blown out kind of cash register thing going on. It's got like a very start stop kind of quality, and then it kind of drops out and you just get this kind of plucky bass line, and I don't know, personally I'm just like dreading, I'm like, oh my god, that like wild clatter is gonna crash back in and like knock my head off any second. And then it actually returns in like an even crazier, like more fucked up way. Like it's like got kind of screeches and stuff mixed in, and it's like even more blown out than it was before. You know, I just find it so interesting because like a lot of the sounds of this record I would describe as like kind of anxiety inducing, and yet the use of the strings is often like really beautiful. Like on Keenel 4, for example, like it is it's one of those rare times, you know, we always like everybody fawns over it, like the rare times the Odd-Tekker decides to do this, but it's like very open, emotionally available, kind of simple melody that anybody could fall in love with, mixed in with like this wild clatter, you know, over and over again on these tracks.
So you're saying again that Odd-Tekker made that part?
Yeah, I'm being a little unfair here. Just sort of assume, again, it's like, it's so good that I'm like, gotta be Odd-Tekker, by themselves. I'm not the only one who thinks that, mind you. I think a lot of people just sort of lean in that direction because it's like, we know for sure that the first two EPs were collaborative because, you know, there's other people listed on the record and stuff, but it's like, there's a hardcore faction that just thinks that after that they were just doing it by themselves. I don't know if I totally buy that, but sometimes I do. Now, listener Joe also wrote, we kind of talked about this a little bit already, but he said, I love how all the tracks are named Keenel X. It makes it seem like these are remixes of some original Keenel that ended up being radically different from each other. Even if it's not all remixes, it seems like they created all these songs using the same basic elements and sound palette. On the other hand, all six Keenel tracks, these including the remix EP, which we'll talk about next episode, are so different from each other that it stresses how amazing they are using the same tools to create so many good and different sounding outcomes. Listener Steve also speculated that the tracks were composed of the same source material, even if the results are very different. So again, we kind of already talked about it, but is that, you know, where you land on this? Is like there was some original Keenel and these are all different interpretations of it, or what?
I don't know if there was an original Keenel, but I think that there, you know, it maybe Keenel is the bank of sounds or something, because I do think it is like the same bank of sounds used in different sort of ways.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, it's just like the paradox of this record that I think they do sound so distinct. You can totally tell it's the same sound palette, but they just sound so distinct. And it's like, I start like kind of stretching, you know, where I'm like on Keenel 1, like those low plucked strings, you get to Keenel 2 and there's more of like a crunch, like a crunchy kind of like bass lick thing. And I'm like, oh, is that like kind of a digitized and like crumpled up like a paper ball version of the very clear, pure, like low plucked strings that I heard on the previous track? But like, you know, it might just be like a totally new synth line or something, you know, and I'm just like, I'm stretching to make that connection and like figure out where every single sound, found its place. I don't think we're that far where like each one is literally a reconfiguration of the same thing. But I do feel like they are interpretations of some like wider set of sounds, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I agree. I don't know that it's, you know, 100% the same sounds on every song, but I think there's, you know, there's at least like a core that is used. And like you said, with that bass sound, it sounds very plucked and real in the first one and not so much in the other ones. But again, yeah. It could just be digitized, crunched up, you know, affected in a sense that it is the same. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Now, it was listener Tom who complained that Guestcom tracks usually don't develop, but he believes that Keynell is the notable exception. Listener Joe also wrote that he loves how all the tracks are long and have time to fully breathe, grow, and develop. They do what pre-digital AE did so well in allowing tracks to have interlocking elements of melody and rhythmic repetition in ways that make it feel like there's endless variation. So what do you think about the track constructions here? Is this like a step up from the, you know, more repetitive stuff we've been talking about so far?
I think so. I mean, this is my favorite of the records you know, talk about today. And it does, like, none of these songs feel underdeveloped or just like, oh, we hit the groove, we left it for 5 minutes and then move on to the next thing. Like, it feels very composed. I mean, I think like Joe said, it even sort of feels like the EP itself is maybe one, you know, piece of work. So definitely, I definitely think this is a step up. I mean, I'm gonna be like you for a second here, but this is the one that I don't think would surprise me to find that it is just, you know, Rob and Sean only, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think they're like masterfully composed. There's a lot of interlocking parts that just so perfectly like meld together. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm just like sort of jotting down notes on like Keynell one, for example, and it's like you got those low pluck strings, you get like a higher layer of pluck strings. It's like creates this nice like kind of counterpoint. You get like a sort of proper like string section sort of joins in. You get like another high keyboard melody on top, and it's like I just look at my notes on every track here and it's like, oh, they've added like another melodic line, oh, another one, you know. And it's like they're just so like richly composed, each of these tracks, and they just kind of develop in not just like in a layering on top of each other, but sort of replacing each other and taking, changing places and stuff like that. I mean, I think they're just masterful. It's also like, you know, it's worth noting like Keynell 4, right? Like it seems like, let's see, it's quite long, right? Like 11 minutes, right? So it's the longest track here, 11 minutes and 7 seconds. But it's kind of got like a opening section and it's kind of got a second section, which is like much more ambient and string heavy and just kind of like a nice come down for the whole record. You know, I think there's just a nice honestly variation in the way these tracks are developed.
One thing I literally just noticed, the track listing sides on this record, these are labeled E and F. So is this supposed to be the third, you know, Guestcom EP and sounds of Machines Our Parents Used, you know, doesn't count or something? Maybe that would explain the artwork and stuff, because it looks like on Discogs and everything, it's E and F.
Shit, I didn't even realize that. E and F.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't notice it because it's not in our notes here. I literally just saw it. Yeah, that throws a whole wrench into this thing.
Damn, I gotta chew on that because it doesn't. It wouldn't sound good coming off of Guestcom EP2.
No,
I'll tell
you that right now. I agree there.
Already, Guestcom EP2 wouldn't sound good coming off of EP1. So. I don't hear any relationship there, but that is very, very curious. Now, I want to quiz you on the Rate Your Music track ratings, but they're all bolded except for one. Which one do you think that is?
I'm just going to literally guess. I'll say 3.
You are right.
Oh,
it is 3.
Nice.
It is 3. Maybe just easy to forget the third track, you know? But what are your favorite tracks here?
You know, it's sort of hard to pick just one. I think because these are so similar and dissimilar at the same time, I think they're all good. I mean, my favorite might be the first one. I really like sort of the unaffected plucked bass sound. It's just sort of like a noise, you know, a sound you don't really get in Autechre. You know, it's so real and just sounds like, you know, someone playing a stand-up bass out of thing. I even sort of like the chopped up like little a vocal sample and stuff on here. It sort of gives me like an old dial-up early internet, you know, sort of feel like, you know, it's glitching out kind of thing. So I think that's my favorite here.
I didn't mention that. There is kind of like a weird like scrambled chatter, like digitized chatter on most of these tracks. Sometimes like really buried, sometimes more prominent. That's another like element that they all kind of share. But I honestly got like love everything here. I mean, I love the first one for all the reasons you just said. I already talked about it, but like that moment that the like extra digitized drum loop comes in on Keynote 2, it like just slams in. I just like live for that. Keynote 3, I kind of like how it's again got that kind of like tumbling, like glitchy rolls of percussion, but it has like just a more minimal quality. It kind of like at the core, it's just kind of like a little, like a light bass line and just some like strings interweaving and stuff. I don't know, just really like kind of nice chill out, like in a minimalist way. And then Keynote 4 just feels like a juggernaut. In fact, I'll just move on to our listeners' highlights. Listeners wrote into praise pretty much every track here, as we are. Like listener Steve, who writes, "I love the layered, crunchy beats, deep bass, and simple repeating string melody of Keynote 1. It's so effective. I love all the different melody sections that are layered over each other in this track. Keynote 2, I love how it starts with a simple melody, but then it's quickly overtaken with what sounds like a monstrous machine attempting to start up. Then a low bass line and strings permeate throughout the machine. This is another thing of beauty. Keynote 3 doesn't disappoint. Another crunchy hip-hop groove, and there's a haunting melody that could have been featured on Garbage. Then there's listener Tom, who said that these are all good to great, but the fourth towers over all of them. It starts with thumping kick drums and multiple clicks and rattles, which come in separately, a soft sort of piano jangle, which subtly pitches up about halfway through, pizzicato strings, which after a few minutes double up on themselves, and then bowed strings, which start off quietly but gradually become the dominant part. The track construction is absolutely masterful, the way the various elements build on top of each other, occasionally dropping out for short periods before the percussion finally disappears completely over the halfway mark, leaving the various melodic elements, which themselves vanish one by one, like ghosts into the night, until the bowed strings are left floating weightlessly." Really, really, really like that and wanted to read in full. There was a lot more listener gushing, honestly, that I wish I could read here. But do you kind of agree that, like, I mean, it sounds like you kind of like the first one, but I hear a lot of people say Keynote 4 is kind of like a masterpiece of this era.
Yeah. I mean, I agree completely with the listeners. I think this whole EP is great. This is the one, of the ones that we've covered so far, that I think I would say, you should listen to.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree. It's like, can't get over Keynote 4, honestly. I don't know. I almost struggled like what to say about it, because I feel like the listener there just like nailed it. But it's like, it's really just like this grand epic statement with, like, again, so much like just open, emotionally available beauty, like I was talking about before, and just the way it kind of like drifts into like pure string arrangement that just sort of like hangs there. I mean, it's just like, it's really like a must hear track on a must hear record, in my opinion. Now, on that note, we didn't get many negatives from listeners, aside from listener Tom, who called the bouncy bass melody on Keynote 1 arguably annoying. But is there anything you don't like about this record?
No, I don't think any complaints here.
Yeah, I don't either. I can't think of a single bad thing to say, honestly. But, moving on, we got a lot of AE comparisons for this one. Listener Joe calls it the missing link between Tri-Repete and Chiastic Slide, adding most of the synths and melodies sound like a continuation of the Tri-Rep style, but the track construction is already a lot more sparse and minimalistic in the Chiastic style. And listener Mitchell called it a stronger take on what Chiastic Slide tried to do. That's a hot take.
Yeah.
Listener Steve said that Keynote 4's melody is almost identical to Sickly. This is a version of Sickly with a hip-hop beat, strings, and an even longer fade-out. And listener Tom went so far as to say that these tracks are first-rate and have the fingerprints of Autechre all over them, to the point that he's always suspected that this is exclusively the work of Sean and Rob. So what do you think about all that, about how it fits in? Like, do you see it as the missing link between Tri-Repete and Chiastic Slide?
It does. Like, this one sort of... This is the one that it wouldn't surprise me if it just was an Autechre, EP instead. And yeah. And like I even said, you know, if this one exclusively is Sean and Rob, I said earlier, you know, like pretty much all these releases, you know, they don't really scream Autechre to me. You know, most of them, if someone played it, I wouldn't guess it had anything to do with Autechre. But this is the one that feels a little different. You know, while definitely there's some sounds that aren't, you know, traditional Autechre, you know, sort of sounds. It's got the fingerprints on it, like the listener said. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. Honestly, I feel like it has the composition and the grandeur of Tri Repete, especially with the use of strings and everything. But it's those kind of like crunchy, messed up beats, I think, are like pure chiastic slide. Like you hear a lot of that. Like I think we compared it to like if you were crunching up paper or something like in front of a microphone, like actually rubbing it against yeah. the microphone, like constructing beats out of that. There's a lot of that kind of sound. So yeah, I mean, I just totally hear it as like, if you love both those records, which you should, then you will love this record because it's almost got like a best of both worlds thing. On the other hand, though, you know, it's like, it is interesting thing about like Gescom's, you know, quote unquote aims that we're trying to figure out. It's like, it feels deliberately limited in a way that Autechre never is. You know, it's like, it seems to have these rules set up where it's like, you know, not literally, but you can only use strings and blown out percussion. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, there's rules to this yeah. thing. And they never do that. You know, it's just sort of like interesting how, I don't know, it ends up being like a really fruitful project. You would think that like Autechre wouldn't work well in a limited, you know, rule heavy environment, but it feels like very strict what sounds are allowed to be on this project, and they just nail it.
Yeah. I didn't even, you know, really think about that. You know, it's sort of strange that this is the one I think is the most Autechre sounding when it kind of does the most un-Autechre thing of yeah. you know, reusing things.
Yeah. Well, listener Joe called this one of his all-time favorites, and listener Steve similarly said he'd put it in his top 10 AE releases, maybe even top 5. Do you feel that strongly about it?
I don't feel that strongly, but it's definitely the best Gescom release I've heard so far, and it may be in all.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have to chew on it a little bit more because I think it's very special. It's like really, really... It's kind of like a little masterpiece. I just don't know how many albums I could get it ahead of, but there are definitely some Autechre records that I would put it ahead of for sure.
Yeah, I could, you know, come to that conclusion. I'll meet you in the middle there.
Yeah. All right. Well, any other closing thoughts? If not, I just want to remind everybody that we will discuss the remixes before you blitz us with emails. Yeah, yeah. We're missing some key part of this. We will discuss the remixes next episode. But anything else on Keynel? Are you ready to move on?
Nah, I'm looking forward to those remixes, though. Motor came out on Source Records sometime in 1996. I've seen January 1996 as a possible date, which would place it slightly earlier than Keynel. But confusingly, the disc claims it's from 1994, when it definitely isn't. Other than that, wrong info. The disc says nothing about personnel or even playback speeds. But it's worth noting that the motor depicted on the A-side is reminiscent of the inner sleeve art from Autechre's Tri Repete. Lastly, Motor seems to be another of Gescom's least loved releases. It's got very few ratings on Radio Music and only an average of 2.88.
Now, we didn't hear many positives about this release from listeners. Listener Joe said, it's not really my cup of tea, as Acid Trance also isn't my cup of tea. And listener Steve said he bought it on vinyl, found it repetitive and boring, and promptly traded it to someone on the IDM list, though he kind of wishes he kept it because it was oddly the thickest and heaviest vinyl record I had ever seen. Not 180G like so many modern represses. This was at least 200G, possibly much more. That's weird. In any case, how would you describe the overall sound of this one? Is it as repetitive and just boring old Acid Trance as some of our listeners seem to think?
I think so. Yeah, it is. This one feels like a genre exercise. You know, we've sort of gone back to that, or maybe not back to it if it came out before Keynel. But yeah, I mean, it definitely repetitive is the descriptor I would use here.
Yeah, I'm just completely baffled by this one because it is it's really like standard, yeah, kind of like Acid Trancey fare. It's got like a very a lot of like arpeggiating riffs and stuff. in a kind of craftworky vibe. We were talking about craftwork earlier, but it just all sounds like deliberately vintage equipment. Like it kind of reminds me of, you know, like, God, Aphex Twin's like Cheetah EP, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
where it's like
yeah.
sort of like an exercise in using a single synth or something like that. Or even like Venetian Snares, like what was that, traditional synthesizer music or whatever that's called?
Yeah.
It has that kind of vibe to it, which is very strange coming after the two records we just talked about. It just feels like this is some old equipment, and let's see if we can make some like standard acid techno with this shitty cheap equipment we have.
Yeah, this is the one that sort of it seems fun to do, you know, at home
yeah.
and stuff. You know, it's almost like the equivalent of noodling around on the guitar or something. It's like, all right, you know, keep it in your bedroom. Nobody else really needs to yeah. to be involved.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just want to go out of order with this one and bring Autechre into the conversation already. Listener Joe wrote, I will say that it's cool to see them explore styles that were so different from the main AE releases of the time. As far as the style of music goes, the sound design is very cool and complicated, but I'm not really competent enough to comment much more on it. It definitely still sounds like the advanced use of analog hardware and not at all digital like LP5. Motor One sounds kind of like a cool tribute to Kraftwerk's Autobahn and has the same kind of early electronic driving feel to it. So do you feel like this is AE having some fun with a different style, as we've discussed, or do you have a temptation to say that Sean and Rob might not have been very involved with this one? In that case, why the tri-rep style artwork? Basically, are you just as baffled by this as I am?
I'm pretty baffled. I mean, there's that temptation to say they're not involved,
yeah,
mostly because it's bad. But I think it very easily could just be them having some fun in a different style, you know. Especially since we know the first two, you know, Guestcom EPs, you know, they're credited as being on there. And, you know, I think we determined they feel like genre exercises. And that's how this one feels. The artwork, you know, it being tri-rep style, you know, that is a bit strange that it's the same sort of motor. But I kind of took it to, you know, I agree with what Joe said about like Autobahn and stuff. And so I sort of took it as a reference to that, you know, like people call that Kraftwerk beat, like the motoric beat, which I think means motor in German. So I sort of took it as a reference to that. And also, you know, like how repetitive, you know, it's sort of the music here, like sort of sounds the way an engine sounds running, you know, it just sort of chugs along, you know, over and over. It's strange that it's, you know, the same sort of engine that's in the Tri-Repete artwork, but maybe limited engines to pick from in over there in England. I don't know.
I mean, honestly, it's like, to be fair, the Tri-Repete artwork looks like kind of alien technology or something. Like it's like rusted and like looks kind of antique, and yet it doesn't look like anything that you've seen on Earth or something is kind of the vibe I get from that. And I don't know, because I don't know shit about engines or whatever, but this kind of just looks like a normal motor to my eyes, which again, no nothing.
It says Fiat, which is a car, which is a car brand. So I'm gonna guess that it is just a real engine. But again, I don't know dick about cars.
I'm way out of my element on this car talk. But it looks like more normal, so it might have nothing to do with Tri-Repete at all, and not even be trying to evoke it. And it might, honestly, I think the better explanation is what you said, that it is kind of trying to evoke the early Kraftwerk obsession with driving and transportation and everything. And you know, it again, that like first track, it just has like a very kind of like, you know, it reminds me of like Europe Endless or something, with just kind of like that really like almost primitive like arpeggiating riff running over the course of it, kind of a bouncy, fun driving in your car and on the Autobahn kind of a vibe. You know, I would quiz you on the individual track ratings, but listener Tom pretty much summed it up when he called Motor 1 a nice track, but asked, is it just me or are Motors 2 through 4 basically the same track? Do you agree with that? And do you have any personal highlights or lowlights here?
Well, I'm glad he said that, because I really was thinking the same thing. It just like kind of sounds like they're the same track, like slightly changed, like, you know, almost a remix. But I don't know. It like the tempos are a little different, and it sometimes sounds mildly different, but yeah, 2 through 4 are pretty much the same song, and track one, it's just so standard with that, you know, arpeggiated, you know, techno kind of thing. It's like not special at all. It's just sort of like, I feel like I've made that same song dicking around with, you know, arpeggiators on a synth before, you know, and I didn't bother to record it. So I'm not sure why they did.
Yeah. I mean, I think track one is like a fun little throwback thing. Tracks 2 and 3, get really annoying because they both have like a very standard kind of 4/4 stomp kind of a thing. And like
4 on the floor kind of thing.
Yep. And like a cheap kind of shitty hi-hat and clap, you know, on the 2 and 3 respectively. You know, just really, there's like a nice crunch to it, I guess, but it's just like everything I hear, it's like you get this kind of like clanging bell sound on Motor 3, for example. You know, I'm honestly kind of bored out of my mind by like just the repetitive like 4/4 stomp, but it's everything you hear just sounds like, oh, that sounds like really cheap and antiquated, that sound. You know, I can like actually picture the drum machine that comes with that stock like clangy bell sound, you know, or something like that. Those really wear out their welcome. I will say that by Motor 3, like by the end, you get a little bit of these kind of swelling, chiming chords underneath there. And has kind of like a nice Ebo effect in the way it's swelling. And it does kind of strike me as like being, again, I don't want to just assume that anything good about this must be Autechre and everything else is not Autechre, but it just kind of strikes me as like, again, a little bit of that touch that I was talking about on Gescom EP1 with like just the quality of like light synth and string accompaniment kind of really adding a lot to a track. I get a little bit of that there. There's even like, you know, just kind of a nice like kind of glassy chord thing. It might even be those like chiming chords getting sustained by the end. That just like, I'm just such a like fanboy of Autechre that it's just like, it sounds like shit. It sounds like really cheap equipment, but I just imagine, tell me if I'm crazy, if you like took like the shittiest little toy keyboard from Goodwill or something and you gave it to Sean and Rob, they could probably make something pretty beautiful out of it. You know, not the greatest thing you've ever heard, but like they could probably do something pretty cool with it.
Yeah,
like
squeeze and, something. Yeah.
And I kind of feel like by the end of Motor 3, I'm like, hey, they're squeezing a little something out of this like shitty vintage equipment. And like in this little genre exercise, they made a little something. And then honestly, you know, just to wrap it up, Motor 4, I feel like it almost has like a kind of, again, I might be reaching at straws here, but it's like almost got like a circuit bent quality. Like I actually do picture like a shitty keyboard, like being fucked with, because it has a little bit more glitchiness and stuff. It sounds like intentional glitchiness in contrast to just like the antiquated crunch of some of the earlier tracks. And, Motor 4 gets a little cool, honestly, in that way. But you feel me on any of this?
You know, this is my least favorite of the ones that we've talked about today. It just doesn't seem to have any real purpose. I like don't understand why it's, you know, released. I don't know if this is just because this one sucks, but this is the one I could say like, oh, maybe, you know, Autechre's not involved in this one, kind of thing. I don't know. Like at least Gescom 2, like at least the second song was you know, kind of nice, and you know, the first one was at least something different. But here I don't know. It's just so like I never wanted to listen to this one. You know, I was like never like, oh yeah, it's Motor time. In fact, this is definitely the one I listened to the least over. You know,
I know. And honestly, I had this like playlist, right, where it's like, it was everything in the order we were talking about it today. And it was like such a drag finishing Keynel 4.
Yeah. Then like going,
moving into Motor.
I'm glad I didn't do that. God. Yeah.
Such a drag every time. I was like on such a high and I'm like, oh fuck, I forgot I have to listen to Motor. But you know, I have kind of like a conspiracy, thought here.
Oh, good.
Tell me what you think of this, where it's like, you know, people assume it's like just a misprint 1994 on the label, but what if it was like, this is like actually a little concept record where it's like, let's pretend it's 1994 again and just kind of jam out. I mean, weirdly, it sounds like it would sound outdated in 1994, but it does seem like the kind of thing where they were like, yeah, let's pretend like, it's an earlier era, you know?
You know, if this came out like today, I could, and had 1984 on it, I could get it. But like it came out in 96, you know, so they're like, hey, let's pretend it's a year and a half ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like us pretending it's 2019.
Yeah, exactly. hope no one gets sick. I just sort of assume that, you know, the songs were written in 1994, or it may be copywritten in 1994, and that's why it's, you know, on the label there. I did notice that, you know, it's wrong on Rate Your Music. Listed as 94 and stuff. I'm not going to go for your conspiracy theory this time.
Well, definitely deliberately throwback, but yeah, the 1994 thing might just be a mistake. But, all right, that's probably enough talk about Motor. I just want to wrap this episode up by reading a comment from listener Joe, who writes, "For me, it's extremely difficult to describe the sound of Gescom compared to the sound of Autechre, in part because the sound of Gescom has changed as much as the sound of Autechre has over the span of their releases. It's interesting to me that in the Ask Autechre Anything, when asked if Gescom should be considered part of the AE discography, they plainly said that Gescom equals Gescom. There certainly is something about much of Gescom's music that sounds like it wouldn't quite fit with the rest of AE's discography, but it's hard for me to understand how much of that is the influence of the other people who work with them. In any case, the music seems so similar in terms of the overall mood and sensibilities of Autechre that it sounds like Sean and Rob are by far the strongest influences on the music." We'll have to return to this after we've worked through more Gescom releases, but based on what we've talked about today, does Gescom belong in Autechre's discography? Like, should anybody working through AE's discography go from like Tri-Rep to Keenel to Motor to Chiastic and so on?
If it's like your first time going through Autechre, definitely not. I don't think you're gonna get your mind blown by anything, even though, you know, Keenel I think is really great. I don't think that, you know, they're necessary. You know, they're sort of the side items, you know, that you know, once you've familiarized yourself with Autechre and stuff, like, you know, not knock yourself out, you know, go through them. I think essentially, like, the way we've done it on this podcast is the way you should, you know, go through the main Autechre stuff and then, you know, circle back around to it. There's definitely things worth hearing here, and even the stuff that's kind of bad, like Motor, and even to some extent Gescom 2. You know, it's short enough that it's like, you know, it's interesting to hear something so different from at least maybe Autechre, and so it's worth hearing, but it's not like essential listening or you've got to stick it. You know, it's the missing link between, you know, all the records and all that. I don't think it's, you know, that important.
I mean, it feels like some of them are, you know,
yeah.
Like Keenel does feel like really tied to Tri-Repete that came before it and Chiastic that came after it. But yeah, I mean, it's just sort of unfortunate because I feel like, you know, I'm tempted to say that the first EP, Sounds of Machines and Keenel are like kind of essential listening. Like, if you're into 90s electronic music, they're just really, really cool records. But they are kind of like strange kind of genre exercises, or like maybe in the case of Keenel, more of like a deliberate limitation or something, like we talked about. And they do just kind of feel like they are meant to be off to the side, and they're kind of presented in a way that's meant to be off to the side. And, you know, it's just sort of unfortunate because I feel like if you start digging into Gescom, you know, and again, we're only like halfway through it, but it's like you start to feel like, oh wow, you know, there's like some great stuff here. But then there's like EP2 and there's Motor that just kind of remind you that this is going to be a hit or miss thing, which is also very different from Autechre. And it just kind of, it makes you stop short from saying every Autechre fan needs to like follow along with Gescom while they're working their way through. You know, it just, I guess the short way to say it is like, I think they want you to think of it like a side thing. And even in that AAA, they say Gescom equals Gescom. It's like, you know, you might hear little influences. You might get little insights into Autechre's creative process, like we were talking about, but, don't confuse the two. They are separate things.
Yeah, definitely. I think Gescom is a group of exercises, you know, whether it be genre or, you know, like Keenel, you know, limitations. mini disc. We'll talk about, you know, it just always seems like there's some sort of experiment or exercise or something. Whereas, you know, Autechre Records don't have that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, any closing thoughts on this chapter of the Guestcom journey?
No. I mean, it was nice delving into it, even though I didn't enjoy, basically half the records too much. But but it's still, you know, it was fun to see those little, you know, kind of other sides of Autechre. And, here's some new to me music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll say just for anybody worried about me who skipped over Guestcom, I can tell you I thoroughly enjoyed these last 2 weeks. I think like there were a couple duds here, but like for the most part, this was some really awesome music. Like I had so much fun. I'm like actually so excited to hear the rest of Guestcom.
Yep. All right. Well, what do you think about Guestcom's early releases? Again, we might be a little inconsistent with our next few uploads, but we're doing another listener episode, email episode soon. So send us your thoughts at gonkcastpod@gmail.com. We'll also talk about Autechre's Keynel remixes on that episode. So be sure to share your thoughts. Next proper episode after that, the rest of Guestcom's discography. We want your opinions and hot takes, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up YouTube, stay connected, Twitter, Instagram @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.